This is episode 011 of The Bad Apples. Yes, we are The Bad Apples, and we are hardcore Mac users, using Macs in the most extreme way that we can find. We review the latest apps, we'll come up with a couple of hacks, and we'll talk about some of the old Apple products that we have liked in the past. So stick around, whether you're an Apple newbie, or someone thinking about getting an Apple, or someone who's been with Apple for the last 20 years, this is the place for everything Macintosh. And speaking of peripherals, there was a great little scanner a long time ago, probably around 86 or 87-ish. It was actually a ink cartridge for a dot matrix printer that some company had modified. They placed a laser in there instead of ink, and the idea was that you could feed a sheet of paper through your dot matrix printer, and rather than printing onto it, you would be scanning off of it. So you could put in a photograph and start the laser scan. It would shuffle the page through the printer slowly, line by line, and each line the laser scanner would pass and scan the information in. At that rate, it generally took a few minutes to actually scan something in. But what you would have in the end is a really good rendition of whatever you've scanned. For some reason, I want to say it was actually only black and white. I could be wrong about that. In fact, I think I'm wrong about that. I think it was color. It was a good rendition of it, though. Good quality. And you could take it into PaintShop Pro or something like that. Platinum Paint. And fool around with it. So I was doing Photoshop-style compositing at a very young age. With my dad's laser scanner, and having a lot of fun. RoboCop and me were in photographs together frequently. I was also a member of the Enterprise Next Generation. It was a lot of fun, and it was really cool. I don't know what people were supposed to use it for, I mean, other than entertainment like I did, but I'm not sure if there was an OCR plug in back then or not, but that was a great tool. It was for the Apple Inkjet, the image writer, actually, is what it was called. And like I say, it was the dot matrix version, so whatever you fed through there had to be one sheet and one sheet only, and it would have to be something that you didn't mind being placed through the rather harsh rollers on a dot matrix printer. And looking back on it, it really did seem a little bit like a mod or something. I mean, almost, I find it hard to believe looking back that someone was selling it. I mean, I remember that it had a big cable coming out of the print head, so you had to essentially take off the lid of the image writer. So that, of course, told the image writer that it could not function because there was a sensor of some sort that told it not to print when the lid wasn't on. So it came with a little key that you could put down over that sensor so that it fooled the printer into thinking that the lid was actually on it. And then from the print cartridge slash scanner itself was a very long cable that would stretch down from your printer and plug into your serial port or whatever port it plugged into. So it was a really strange looking device, very contrived, but really, really cool. And that's our fond Apple memory for the day. Hey, you know what? Open source needs you. Why does it need you? Well, especially if you're an artist with a technical skill, or just a person with a technical skill who could maybe do some artistic things, there's a need out there for things like fonts and clip art, things like that. Because, like it or not, the more people are dependent on these other companies like Adobe or Microsoft or any company that is in the business of designing and releasing fonts, the more that these companies have control over our daily computer lives. And if you're anything like me, your daily life pretty much is your computer life. Now, not everyone knows that fonts are actually owned by companies. So in order to use a specific font, especially a unique font that you might not be able to find elsewhere, you might have to pay money to be able to use it in, for instance, an ad campaign. If you're an independent artist or a small business, that can be prohibitive. And some people ask sometimes where their money is going when they're buying a specific software package. It just seems sometimes an exorbitant price for a certain software package. And the answer is that there's a whole maze of licenses that you're not even aware of in the background. You get maybe a sense of it whenever you're installing it and there's this 20-page license agreement that you click through and agree. But in there, and not in there, but behind the scenes, things are being paid for by you that you're not even aware of. So what can be better than free? Not much. So how can you help? It's quite simple. If you're an artist, get the GIMP and do some artwork and post it to the various free clip art forums that are out there. A great place for open source clip art is openclipart.org. They are a project that is gathering up all the Creative Commons licensed clip art so that we can all use them in our brochures and flyers and whatever we're using this clip art for. We're able to use them for free and not depend on any big company to sell us a big office package or a big graphic design package with their prepackaged clip art. Similarly, we need open source fonts. Now, there are open source fonts out there, but there can always be a greater variety. The commercial font world is thriving. Thousands and thousands of fonts are out there that you can pay for and use. Not so many that you can use for free. There's a great little program called Font Forge. It is written for both Mac OS X and Linux, and you can download it from sourceforge.net. And its sole purpose is to help you create and package a font. You have to do the hard part, the artistic part, but it will help you make sure that all the key maps are correct and make sure that you're not leaving any characters that someone might press expecting to find a certain character, that you're not leaving that out. Some of the specialized characters, like when you're hitting Option G or Option C, things like that. So if you have a propensity for font design or if you'd like to give your hand at it, go for it. It's FontForge is the program. It's at sourceforge.net. Have fun and post it. Let us know about it. We'll announce it. I like Safari, and I always have. And I remember when it first came out, Internet Explorer had pretty much killed off everyone else. And it wasn't because IE was any good. It was just that everyone else was strangely non-functional at the time. Netscape had kind of been over for a while by then. They'd gone up to Netscape 7, but I remember it being a painful, painful thing to try to run. And I remember I tried a few others in my effort to get away from IE 5.5. I tried Opera, which I think was either charging back then, or it was just not really that good. I don't remember which. I also tried OmniWeb, and I think that might have been the one that was charging. But one of those two, either Opera or OmniWeb, just didn't work with a lot of the sites that I typically went to, and then the other one was charging, and I just couldn't wrap my mind around paying for an internet browser. Still can't. And I'm pretty sure that I tried, like, Camino or something like that. But whatever it was, you know, it wasn't where it needed to be. So I guess it was an odd time for browsers. But anyway, when Safari came out, it was really big news, and I think it saved my internet experience. And it became, as we all know, the default browser for Mac users. And it really killed off IE on the Mac platform, thank goodness. I never liked Internet Explorer. I thought it was backwards. I thought it was anti-design friendly. It was just a terrible browser. And I never enjoyed using it for the brief time that I had to use it. And then Firefox hit the scene. And Firefox is completely equal in seamless functionality, but it has the important benefit of add-ons and extensions and themes. And the add-ons in Firefox are easy to obtain. They're free. And the one that I want to talk about has literally transformed my internet experience. It is Adblocker Plus. You can install it from the add-ons page of Firefox.com. And once it's installed, it uses a list of online known advertisers to literally block annoying ads or any ad from ever showing up on the web page that you're browsing. It's a completely transparent process too. It's if you're on a page that you'd normally have like Google ads on, or those stupid internet dating services ads and all that, those things just aren't there anymore. The site's design remains completely intact and sometimes, you know, better for the lack of ads. But the pages also, they tend to load faster because there's no ad content to load. It's just not coming through. And they're much more pleasant to look at. And above all, it reminds you that the internet is a very interactive medium. You know, we control how we experience as much as, if not more than, the people putting the content online. You know, you think about it, you can increase the text size of the pages. You can block ads now. You know, these things are simple interactive ways to kind of define your experience. And if everyone installed Adblocker Plus, I could imagine a really sharp drop in internet advertising, especially among the gambling and dating sites, which naturally are the most annoying ones anyway. So it's a really great way, as Firefox says, to take the internet back. Hey, admit it, you want a coffee break. Well, so do I. Go get a cup of coffee and we'll be right back.
Doing?
Trying out some free and open source software. Why?
Oh, that looks cool, but I don't have a Linux box.
That's not a problem. A lot of open source software is available for Macs and Windows machines.
Yeah? Whoa, cool. I'll start downloading right away. Let's see. Torrent site. Oh, serial numbers to crack.
No. That's commercial and proprietary software you're illegally downloading. I'm talking about legal, free, and open source software.
Oh, but I know what I'm doing. See, replace this file with the crack file and then...
Attention! You with illegal software on your machine! Shut it down and come out with your hands up!
Oops. That's for you.
He's right here on the third floor! It's open!
When do you want me to visit? Mondays or Fridays? Man, you should have listened to SourceTrunk.
SourceTrunk.com, your weekly trunkload of open source.
Are you finding yourself doing a number of commands a lot? Are you tired of typing them in again and again? Just type in history, and the shell will give you a numbered list of everything you've done during that session. If you want to rerun a previous command, all you have to do is find its number, type in an exclamation point and the number, and it will run the command again. A variation of this is the up arrow at a prompt. This shows you the previous command, and then the previous command before that, and the one before that, and so on. I use this frequently to recall a long, convoluted path, and then I arrow back to the beginning of the line, and I just change or add the command as I need. So if I've just listed a certain folder, and then I think, well, gee, that's where I really need to be, and I want to change directory into that folder, then I just go up one for the previous list, the path, go back to the beginning, and get rid of the ls, and change it to a cd, and then I've got the path, and I hit enter, and it works really well. Yet another time-saving tool in the same vein is the tab key. It auto-completes words for you. So if you're in a directory and you want to open a file with a very long name, you just type in the first few letters and you hit tab, and this will complete at least as much of the file name as possible. If you have something like file name underscore whatever underscore 3.txt, then you'll type in F and hit tab, and it'll give you back file name underscore whatever underscore. And then it's up to you to let it know whether you want file name whatever 1 or file name whatever 2, file name 3. So you type in 3 and you hit tab, and it'll fill in the .txt for you, and then you're off and running. That helps a lot when you've got spaces in names, and spaces are always kind of a pain to type in in Unix. So it's kind of nice to just be able to have it autocomplete the name for you. You don't have to worry about the spaces. And that's it. When it was when it first debuted, Automator was pitched as the programming tool for the average user. It was going to make, as the name suggests, automation of your computer finally really a possibility for you, even if you didn't know scripting or programming. Now, in reality, Automator is pretty complex and not terribly flexible for the average user. When I first started using it, I had really expected something more like Photoshop's action palette, where essentially you create a new action, press record, and you carry out the processes that you want to have happen. You save the action, and then you can run the action on any picture that you want. In addition to that, you can save the action out as a droplet so that it's a mini application, and you can use it anywhere on your computer on any picture that you want at any time. You can also batch process photos from within Photoshop using that action. So it's a very flexible action. It's a very flexible palette, rather. A very flexible way of recording your movements and your processes and redoing it, reapplying it to other things. Now, even the things that were very mouse-based and aren't so easy to record, you could record because there's usually a menu option in Photoshop to enter the numbers that you want to have happen. So if it's something like you're cropping all the photos by 1 inch on every side, maybe you can't do that with the crop tool, but you could always go in there and define the exact numbers through the menu item for crop. So it's a great tool. It works really, really well. And I'd expected something like that from Automator. Now, while I don't know the ins and outs and the complexities of programming an entire operating system, Automator just isn't quite what they were pitching it as. It turns out that Automator gives you a set number of actions that someone who does know how to script and program has created for a specific application. You get to take these actions and put them in an order that works for you, save it as a workflow, and that's what you get. Now, it seems to me, with such a limited choice, it's almost like they could have just programmed those things into the operating system or something, rather than making you go through and do it yourself. I guess there's a little bit more flexibility since you can do it yourself. You can schedule certain things to happen. But really, your choices are very limited. The work that it requires to learn Automator in such a way that you can actually make programs that work for you seems to be pretty complex. I know no one who actually uses the program, and I know a lot of computer geeks, and I know a lot of computer geeks who use Macs. I know a lot of computer geeks who use nothing but Macs. No one uses Automator. So I don't know what the problem is there, but I like Automator for a couple of things, and one of them is the ability to do small, easy programs that you can then save as plugins for certain applications, and that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to actually make a plugin for your Finder, and this is a very, very cool feature. It's the simple ability to rotate a photograph that you've imported from your camera. Now, you can do that in iPhoto, and that's fine for people who use iPhoto, but there's a large segment of people who do not use iPhoto. I don't use iPhoto for organization, and I don't use it for adjusting pictures, color correction, cropping, things like that. I import the pictures off of my camera simply into the Finder. I store them myself, I organize them myself, and then I burn them out to a DVD eventually. So this is a handy tool to have for those kinds of things. Now, to do this, let's open up Automator. If you've never used Automator before, don't worry, it's quite simple for what we're doing. When you open up Automator, you'll see essentially three columns. The first one is labeled Library, the second one is labeled Actions, the third one is, I don't think it's labeled at all, but it's your workflow space, it's your work area. So click within the Library column on your Applications folder. This lists all the applications for which you have actions installed in your system. The application that we're going to get first is Finder, and the action within Finder, which the actions will appear in that second column once you click on Finder, the action that you want is Get Selected Finder Items. And you're going to drag and drop that over into your workspace area. So it's a very linear process. You go from left to middle to right. Pretty easy. So you should have a Finder action in your workflow area. Now go back over to the far left column and find the Preview application. You know Preview. You've used it to look at pictures. So click on Preview, and that will bring up a list of actions in that middle column. And there aren't too many for Preview, but one of them will be Rotate Picture. So drag and drop the Rotate action under the Get Selected Finder Items in your workspace, in your workflow space. Now it's going to pop up a menu and say, hey, the action that you're going to add here is going to modify the selected finder item, whatever that might be. Do you want to add a function to make a copy of that finder item? So it's kind of a protection for you, just in case you don't actually want to write a program that will modify your selected item. But in this case, we do want to write a program that modifies our selected item. So do not add. So we're adding the action, but we're choosing not to add that little protective action that it's offering to add for us. So click on Don't Add, and you'll end up with one action that is Get Selected Finder Items, and then under that will be number 2. It will be Rotate Picture. Now this Rotate Picture function gives you a drop-down menu, lets you choose left, right, or 180 degrees. Leave it on left right now. That is, leave it on left for now. And go up to File, Save as Plugin. So now we're going to save it as a plugin for your Finder. This brings up a little dialog box, Save as Pane, and you can name the action something. I chose to name mine Rotate L, that is Rotate capital L, and under that it gives you a choice of how you want to save it. And you want to save it, indeed, as a plugin for Finder, which should be the default selection. And then hit OK. Now go back to your little workflow space. Go to your Rotate Picture action and select from the drop-down menu Right. Save that as a plugin. And again, save it maybe as Rotate capital R. And save it as a plugin for your Finder. And press OK. And if you want one for 180 degrees, you can do that for the 180 degrees. I don't really ever rotate a picture 180 degrees. I don't hold my camera upside down, so it's not really a problem for me. So the left and right are sufficient for me. But if you find yourself rotating things 180 degrees, by all means. And that's really it. They're really simple programs, right? Well, they're very powerful as well. So now quit Automator. You can save the workflow or not. Doesn't matter. You've exported it essentially as a plugin, so you don't necessarily have to save that workflow, since it is such a basic one. But if you want to, go ahead. I didn't. So you're quitting out of Automator, and you're going to your Finder, and locate a picture on your hard drive somewhere, something that you might want to rotate, preferably. And if you control-click on that, or right-click on the picture, it will bring up a contextual menu, and toward the bottom of that contextual menu will be a selection for Automator. And beside Automator, there will be a little triangle indicating another menu. So go into that secondary menu, and the first selection will be Create Workflow, which is not something that you want to do. And under that will be Rotate L and Rotate R. So choose whatever is going to apply for you here, Rotate L or R, and watch in amazement as the Finder hopefully quickly rotates your picture in the way that you want it to be rotated. And it's as simple as that. It's a quick, easy function. It's a plugin for your Finder. Simple as that. Enjoy it. This has been episode 011 of The Bad Apples. For show notes, free wallpaper for your computer, things like that, stop by our website at thebadapples.5gbfree.com or at our new domain name, thebadapples.info. We had to change servers because our old one was really, really bad. Had really corrupt disk permissions. So we're on a new place, a new name, thebadapples.info. Check it out. Be sure to stop by next week. Subscribe to the podcast. Make sure it gets downloaded. We are going live next week. Me and Gort will be doing the live Skype thing with some great tips on networking, some talk about the iPhone, and lots of other cool things. So tune in for sure. The contents of this podcast are covered under the GPL3. Everything is free to share, free to modify, and free to redistribute. Let's keep it that way.
Me, I just came along because I think boys are fun.